Hi, I'm Catherine Galligan, and I believe that love is the most important thing, not only in the world, but in the whole universe. I created the Love to You All podcast as a platform to offer the wisdom and inspiration necessary for us to create a world where love is the guiding force. Together, we can release the protective barriers that keep us from giving, receiving, and fully embodying love. Join me and my guests as we explore the many ways to be the love for our world longing for change, peace, and hope. I believe it's my soul's mission to inspire the courage you need to be the most loving frequency you came here to be in this lifetime. I'm so glad you're here because we have got a world to change. Hello, and welcome back to Love to You All. I'm Catherine Galligan, your host, and today I'm really pleased to bring a conversation to you that I was really lucky to have. It was with a woman named Jackie Flug, and she's got quite the story. This woman has, I joked with her that she's lived five lives already, just compacted into one. But she's a huge inspiration, and she has these beautiful messages to share. And, you know, again and again, I invite these people to come on my show, and I'm grateful that they do because they're all doing like beautiful work in this world. And they're such a contribution to humanity and to society. And I'm lucky to get to meet these people and just have an hour of their time. But so if you don't know who Jackie is, her story, it's pretty incredible. She actually was on a flight from Athens to Cairo back in the 80s that got hijacked. And the terrorist group at the time, they had a thing for Americans and for Israelis too. And so if you were one of those two nationalities, then you were going to get shot and thrown off the plane. And that's exactly what happened to Jackie. She got shot point blank in the head. She was thrown off the plane and kind of left for dead. And the good thing for us is that she actually didn't die. This woman survived, I mean, impossible odds, and what she had to face. So that event was traumatic enough alone. But what she had to face, you know, in the years after that hijacking happened was a pretty major recovery. She was left with a significant brain injury that gave her epilepsy, and also, at least initially, the reading level of a kindergartner. And she had to rebuild her life, you know, she had to rebuild her life and support herself, you know, at the same time. And so she's such an example to me of resilience, and very positive, very, very positive. She has a very special gift of being able to turn things that seem like they're bad into something good. And so she did go on to become a very well-known motivational speaker. And she wrote a book about her experience. So that was only her first book. And so today, actually, what we're going to talk about is her second book. So here she is, and now she's 70 years old, you know, and life went on for Jackie. Life went on. And she talks about how, you know, at some point, you know, after she kind of retired from her speaking career about her hijacking event, that her life sort of went on like cruise control, if you will. And because of that, like she was, you know, I guess sort of able to ignore things that had been important to her. Okay. And so at some point she realized, wow, this doesn't work for me. And so she did a lot of inner work. She started another healing journey. Because she's had a few, she also had colon cancer thrown in there too and recovered from that. So this woman has like nine lives and she just does not give up. The level of radical resilience that she has and this deep devotion that she has to living authentically, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's extremely powerful and it's very inspiring. And to make a long story short, she's written a second book and it's called Wake Up. Say Yes to Creating a Life creating a life you love. And this is what this person has done. So, you know, even at her age, when she realized certain things weren't working for her, she made some pretty major decisions, like courageous, brave decisions to end in a long-term relationship and move out of her home and start over, basically. But she is determined to live her assignment. And in her heart, she knows her truth. And that truth is that she is only willing to live a life of joy, peace, adventure, and love. So if something's not aligning with that, then it's not going to work for her. And so she has written a book about how to do just that. And it's lovely. It's full of lots of funny stories about the whole of her life. And she's had an extremely colorful one. And she's a joy to talk to. And I'm just so lucky that I got to meet her. And I have the good fortune to talk to these amazing people that are just, you know, choosing themselves and being as authentic as possible. And I absolutely love that. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. And I also hope you check out her book. So all of her information is in our show notes. But without further ado, I'm very excited to introduce Jackie Pflug to you. Well, hi, Jackie. Welcome to my show. Love to you all.
Hi, Catherine. It's so nice to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're so welcome. I have really been looking forward to this. And I'm just so grateful that you're here and to like actually meet you. I wish I could meet you in person, but you know, this will have to do for now. So, Jackie, I have to say, if you know, life were a game of cards, you've been dealt a really colorful hand, you know?
Yes, I would say so.
Yeah. And so why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got here?
Okay, I'll be happy to do that. So my name is Jackie Pflug. I live in Minneapolis. I was born and raised in Houston, Texas. And one of my dreams as a teacher and school psychologist back in Texas was to go overseas, to mm-hmm. teach and live overseas. And as mm-hmm. a young teacher at the age of 22, I went over mm-hmm. to Stavanger, Norway, and taught at the Stavanger American School. And while I was there, I met and married my husband at the time. At that time, we married, and his name is Scott Pflug.
Yeah, he's another American.
He's another American, and yeah. We went to a job fair in London, England, as the following year after teaching in Stavanger, and both landed jobs in Cairo, Egypt. And living in Cairo at the time in 1985 was quite interesting. It's definitely a third world country. Once I stopped whining and once I stopped thinking about what was I thinking mm-hmm. coming to Cairo and teaching here, I started to look at the good in it. And I started to befriend different individuals at the marketplace and Egyptians as well. And started to love the country. And it was very difficult to live there because as American teachers, we didn't really have a place to go shopping other than yeah. what was there. And yeah. and so there were marketplaces and we had to freeze meat for 2 weeks to get rid of the bacteria. Same thing mm-hmm. for vegetables. We didn't need to just go into a grocery store and pick up fruits and vegetables and meat and put them in our basket. It was very
difficult. And go home and
difficult.
Cook them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I started to sign up for different classes. I went on a camel caravan. I hung out with teachers that had been there and followed their path on how they were able to get through. And I started to love the country and started to love the people.
And yeah, it's just such a huge adjustment.
Yes, yeah. But I think we can find the good in anything. Sometimes it takes a little bit to look at it, especially in your surroundings. If you think, okay, this is what I wanted. This is what I decided to have. Maybe I'm rethinking this. But I started to look at the good. And then there was a weekend that the first book is talking about. So my first book is called Miles to Go Before I Sleep. And that is my memoir of what happened on the weekend of November 23rd and 24th. I was in Athens, Greece. So I flew from Cairo to Athens to join Scott, my husband at the time, in a volleyball tournament. Yep. And on the way back, I was by myself, and it was Egypt Air 648 coming out of Athens, Greece, and flying to Cairo, Egypt. Now, that was Thanksgiving weekend, and I was on my way to join my friends for a Thanksgiving dinner in Cairo at one of the apartments that one of the teachers lived in. And on my way back, my plane was hijacked by the Egypt Revolution, and we were told that if we did what we were told, we would not get hurt. And I live with that. And at that time, when I'm in the middle of this, I really did think this was the end for me. And I was very, very sad because I was only 29. No, actually, I was 29. And my life had not evolved yet to having children.
What you had in mind.
My life had not evolved yet. And here I was in the middle of this. And I started to think about my life in those moments of certainly chaos, and everyone in the plane were scared and the hijackers were out of control. And I started to think about my life. And although I felt proud of some of the things that I had done, there is still a part of me that gossiped, that didn't always tell the truth, and worried about what others thought of me. And so
I was a little sad about that. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So this is when you're still sitting in your seat, in your window seat, and you're reviewing your life before you've been called up to the front. You're kind of reviewing, and you're not thinking, oh man, I wanted to go to Australia. I wanted to travel here. I wanted to accomplish this. You're not even thinking of it like that. You're thinking about, wait a second, I wasn't being maybe the person I wanted to be. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
That's oh my gosh. Okay. I did not realize that when I read your first book that it was okay. Wow, Jackie. Okay. Please continue.
And I also felt like I might not have been present with people on a day-to-day basis. And so I actually sat everyone in front of me and in spirit and told them what I loved and said goodbye. That eventually turned into a gun battle in the air where we lost air and we had to use oxygen masks. And then we ended up landing in Valletta, Malta. Mm-hmm. Now, that whole hijacking is very interesting. There's so many parts in that hijacking where I felt like I was taken care of by God, by. And as we move along with the hijacking, I ended up being shot in the head, thrown out of the plane, and left on the tarmac. And I was there for 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And I was in and out of consciousness and in and out of sleep. And then I heard some noise around me when I was on the tarmac laying down. And I heard some voices come near me, and they were men's voices. Mm-hmm. And one of the men said, let's do this one right. And they lifted up my body and they slammed me down on a metal bed and lift me up and shoved me into a van. Now, I still think I'm with the hijackers. I think they've come after me and realized I was breathing. And how did they know that? And as we're moving, there's one of the men that doesn't like looking at the gunshot wound on the right side of my head. And he flips me over. And when he did that, I gasped for air. And he starts to scream and yell. And all of a sudden, there's commotion in this van. And I started to listen to their voices. And I thought, well, these voices don't sound like the hijackers' voices. They sound different and perhaps friendly. And so I said to him, are you the good guys or the bad guys? And he said, well, we're the medics, honey, and you're going to be okay. And went off to the hospital.
Yeah.
And then the next day I went through a surgery to remove the bullet, and I live today. And so much of how I think today stems from that hijacking.
I can only imagine. And so I just want to pause for a second. And now I've had the privilege of reading part of your second book. So I know that there was a sniper on the tarmac who was kind of with you, you know, like an observation of you. And did he have any part? I mean, was he long gone by the time the rescue ambulance had shown up? Do you know that detail of your story?
I don't know the detail, but I believe that he was still there.
Yeah.
So okay. I met him. Well, you're talking about my second book. So I met him. So it's very interesting with that second book, because right out of the gate, I talk about going back to Malta.
Yeah.
20 years later.
Right. Right.
And that was 20 years after the hijacking. So that was in 2005. And that's what you're talking about. And there was a sniper that was right next to me because I thought I was alone.
Right.
And so I got to meet him.
And it's just the most beautiful thing that I've ever heard. Like, I love the fact that you weren't alone. You know, I mean, I know you felt so alone, but, you know, you had these guardian angels clearly.
Right.
Taking really good care of you.
Here's why I felt alone. So what I didn't know that I do now was at airports all around the world, there is this place at different airports. They're in Minneapolis, they're in Houston, they're in Dallas, they're in everywhere around the world. There is a place at the airport far, far away from the beaten path, away from the main airport that no one else could get hurt. If there happens to be some kind of plane that is on, that is in trouble, for example, a terrorist attack on an airplane, that pilot is instructed to go to that area. And that area is so far away from the airport. So when we landed and we went to this area, there were no lights. There was nothing. Nothing to even consider that this was an airport. And then when there was daylight, there was just trees, and there were definitely aren't military vehicles around us. But nope, there was not one person in sight.
Yeah, you thought, am I right in understanding? You thought you were just landed somewhere in the middle of the desert. I mean,
exactly.
No concept. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know I interrupted you a little bit. I'm working on that, Jackie. So, okay, let me ask you this. When you were in Athens, and it just kept happening where your husband at the time, his volleyball team, they kept winning. And so you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll catch the next flight. You know, they won a volleyball game. And so it means they're still in the running. And so, okay, well, I want to see if they're going to win or not. So I'm like, you know, I'll catch the next flight. And so I have to believe that, like, on some higher level, there was some higher purpose having you on this flight. So you'd have this, what to me feels like an awful experience. You know, it's awful and maybe wonderful all at the same time. Because like you said, it changed how you think about life. And so you seem to be the queen of finding gratitude and like the silver lining and all these experiences that you've had. And so let me let you go back to what you probably were about to say, is that your hijacking changed how you think about things.
Yeah, it did. And it launched, well, I ended up writing a book 10 years later, and I had already started to change jobs. I was a teacher, but I no longer could do that anymore because after being shot in the head, my reading level plummeted to a kindergarten reading level. I had to learn how to read again. I had to learn how to count money, to tell time. And there's some things that go on with being shot in the right side of your brain. I have epilepsy. So I started to have to learn certain things all over again and knew that I couldn't teach anymore. So something was taking its place. It's very interesting. Something was taking its place and I could feel it. It was this feeling of telling my story and the lessons learned. So it wasn't just about the story. It was about, what do you do with your story? How do you get through it? What lessons have you learned from it? How can you give that to others. And so I started a career in speaking and motivational speaking. So I was a speaker for 25 years around the world, and it was
around the world.
Quite a fun job. And actually, it wasn't a job. It was more a fun passion in telling the hijacking story, that part of history that I hope people don't forget about. And also just some lessons learned about what we were talking about at the beginning of more about not sweating the small stuff, and also being present with the ones that we love, and watch some of the things that I was careful to make sure that I didn't fall into the old way of thinking. I got the second chance. It's easy when you come out of something like this, but as time goes on and the years go on, it's easy to go back into those old way of thinking. So I had to make sure that that stayed with me. But I spoke for 25 years on that platform of speaking, and then I got a message. And here's another thing about that first book and the second book. I talk about this in both books, about listening to that inner voice, that God voice, that voice in your head, whether it's an idea or something that someone says, to follow that. And both of those books, I talk about this particular incident that happened on the plane, and the hijackers tied our hands behind our backs when we were up in the air and sat the three Americans on the first row. And Patrick Baker was the first American to be sat on the aisle. And I had a choice to take the window or the middle seat. And I kept getting a message to take the window seat. And I argued with it because I wanted to take the middle seat because Patrick stands 6'4", and his legs were pushed up against the seat. And with my hands tied behind my back, I thought I would just throw my body into the middle seat. And I kept getting a message, take the window seat, take the window seat. And I kept arguing with it in my head, in a very quick manner, because the hijackers were definitely not patient people. So as I kept hearing this voice and this idea and this message, I thought, okay, I'll take the window seat. So I scooted over and threw my body into the window seat. And Patrick was shot, Scarlett was shot, and I was shot every 15 minutes. And Scarlett did not make it. Patrick, actually, the bullet grazed his head, but I was shot and I lived. And because I took the window seat, I live today.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of issues, as you know, through reading this. You don't get shot in the head and come out the same. So there's a lot of visual problems and all kinds of issues. But I lived. And I learned from that. And so I brought that into my life. And even today, and we're talking almost 40 years later since the hijacking.
Right.
It's a very prominent thing for me to listen to that voice to guide me through. And after I retired, after 25 years from speaking, I got a message that it was time to let go. And just like I argued with the message on the plane about taking the window seat, I sort of argued with it and said,
Jackie,
I'm not ready.
Stubborn?
Yeah, I'm not ready to let this go. People's lives are being touched, it looks like. And I love that part of the speaking. But I was getting a message and it was loud and clear. You've done your part. It's time to let go. And so I gave my last speech in 2011, and I retired from my speaking. And when I retired, I felt like I sort of shut down. I started to live my life on cruise control. And I did that for a number of years.
Did you replace the speaking with a job right away? I'm admittedly not as far through your second book as I wanted to be. I don't know the rest of the story. I just know that you got a clear message. You know, I have a question about that. When you get these messages, is it almost as if somebody's whispering it to you, or is it just like a knowing? It's like you have a knowing.
It's all that. It's a knowing. It's a feeling. Okay. And so many of us push them off because we're too busy. We're too busy with our daily lives. And everyone has a busy life. It just is the way it is.
Yeah.
And sometimes that message can't get through if you're too busy. If you're more quiet, it can get through. It gets through quite a bit for me, even though I'm busy right now, because I've been working with it for 40 years now.
Yeah.
Since the hijacking. So I can hear it and I listen to it and I obey it. And if I don't obey it right away, I'll obey it usually within the end of the day. I'll find a way to make it happen. And it's just it's a quiet voice, and it can be an idea or an inkling, but it's kind of our GPS in our head that guides us through life and helps us to the next path.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to think of them as like, almost like little breadcrumbs. And mm-hmm. so if you're able to listen, you know, or hear it or see it, it's like follow the breadcrumb, even if it doesn't make sense at the time. And I think that's maybe a second thing that like a blessing that you have, Jackie, and it's courage. I mean, you have a tremendous amount of courage because the inner voice doesn't always make sense. And so to follow it takes a lot of courage, and being able to have the strength and fortitude to all the naysayers around you, because they're right, because self-doubt promotes self-doubt. And it's like, well, hold on. My inner voice is always right. So how about you be quiet?
That's cute.
So you retired reluctantly from public speaking. And so tell us what happened next.
Yeah, well, at that time, my dad lives in Houston, or did. He's passed away since. But he had memory issues, and my mother had passed away, and he was lonely. And mm-hmm. and so I made a commitment to go and visit with him from Minneapolis to Houston every 30 days and stay for about 5 days with him and get to just be around him, be with him. And then my son was also in middle school at the time. And so I was looking forward to not having to hurry on to the next job.
Just get on the plane. Just be available.
So my speaking, pretty much everything was out of state at the time. And sometimes I was in 3 states a week, but it was a really good job in the sense that I could take my son to the bus stop one particular day, and then the next, and then come home, pack, and then go to the airport, spend the night at the city I was speaking in, speak that night or the next morning, and fly home the next day and catch him on the bus stop at the end of that day. And so I was looking forward to going to the bus stop and not leaving to go.
Yeah, not having to rush. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were a public speaker, and you still are. You still are. You just have a new medium. It's podcasts.
Yes.
That when you were on stage and you were talking about the lessons learned from the hijacking event, I'm assuming the lessons learned that you were forced to learn just in your recovery and how to manage life as a new person. What were your messages? What did you tell people? What was inspiring to them?
Well, it was a lot of what we just talked about, but there were times when during the healing process that I noticed that I was sweating the small stuff and I wasn't present. And I would talk about that. And I would talk about, if you have this idea, do it now. Don't wait till tomorrow.
Okay.
And not sweating the small stuff, but also following that intuition. And then I would say 7 years after I retired. And now during that retirement, I want you to know that I did those things. I was with my son. I raised my son. I was with my father. And I did those things. And I replaced the speaking with that. And it was a good life. But I think I shut down and I did not know it. And I sort of lived my life on cruise control, asleep at the wheel, if you will. And one day, I believe it was like 7 years ago, I was at my chiropractor's office And I go there like every 2 weeks to get adjusted. And I really like him a lot. His name is Dr. Michael Isaacson. And I have a really good relationship with him. And we were talking about traveling. And he asked me a question. And I answered it. And I was talking about this particular summer, when I was, I believe I was probably 25. I was working on my master's at the University of Houston. Mm-hmm. And my friend Barb Wilson asked me if I wanted to go to Rio Doce, New Mexico for the summer for 3 months. We were both teachers, and yes, I went with her. And I was telling him this story, this funny, funny story about living in Rio Doce. And as I'm telling the story, there's this light that went off in my head, this idea, why don't you write about your stories that you've lived over your entire life? Yeah. And so I went home and I started writing, and I started writing and writing and writing all these stories that I have lived from being a young person to where I am today. And mm-hmm. So at that time, I was 69, so I'm 70 now. But I was 69 and I wrote about all these stories that I had forgotten about. And I wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and didn't stop writing. And probably 6 months later, a year later, I showed it to a friend, Mark LeBlanc, who is a very good friend of mine and was my business coach back in the day when I was speaking, and said, mm-hmm. Is this even a book? And he looked at it. He says, this is definitely a book. Keep writing, keep writing. And so I kept writing. Yeah. And one thing led to another. One choice leads to something else. One decision leads to something else. And before you know it, you've moved on to a different, I've moved on to a different journey. I was on a journey that I didn't know I was on, which was this journey of transformation. And so mm-hmm. then I found an editor to help me out, and we went through the entire book for a year. Mm-hmm. We did some things out, put some things in, fixed up some things, put the puzzle pieces together. And then I presented it to SoulSpeak Press, and they immediately took it. And so I've been on this journey of writing this book for the last 7 years. And this book of transformation, of finding my way out of this cruise control that I had put myself in. And so here we are with this second book.
And so here we are.
Yeah. So this second book, I knew there was another book in me, and I still feel like there might be another one, but it's a lot of work to write a book and to get it published. It's a ton of work, but I have been very fortunate and was guided into the right avenues by this voice that I heard to get it into book form the way it is today.
So it was another example of kind of following those breadcrumbs, just listening to that voice. I mean, it really,
exactly.
Like some people would call that like being in flow, you know, when you're completely aligned with your higher self, you know, and that's the voice that we're hearing, right? So the voice that I hear is my higher self and you're hearing yours. And that keeps us in flow. And whenever we resist it, now we're out of flow. And it's not that things won't work out. They're just a lot harder, like a whole lot harder.
Right, you know? Right. They are. You're right. I believe that definitely.
This episode is brought to you by my online membership for women, Emerge. Think of Emerge as a launch pad for becoming the most unapologetically authentic version of yourself. Inspired by the Year of the Snake, which is all about transformation, this space is for women who are done playing small and are ready to live with radical honesty and deep self-honor. It's not always easy to shed old skin, which is why you don't have to do it alone. Each month, we meet as a support system for one another and for an enlightening masterclass where I blend the magic of Ayurveda, feng shui, and astrology to help you align your energy, your environment, and your whole vibe with what the universe is up to in real time. So if you're craving alignment, empowerment, and real connection across all aspects of your life emerge is for you. This is the year of sacred shedding, and it's all preparing you for new levels of abundance, clarity, and freedom. You can join Emerge anytime. Link to register in the show notes.
Well, you know, you've had such a colorful life and the stories. And so, you know, I've read a good portion of your second book and they're wonderful. I have to tell you, I actually grew up in Houston too. And so when you reference things like Rice Supermarket, I know exactly what you're talking about. I feel like it was my stomping grounds too. It's kind of funny that we share that in common. But you know, as a young woman, you travel to Norway, which is that just in and of itself. Some people never leave their small community, that you did that. And then you met your husband, who was this coach, right? He was a fellow teacher. Mm-hmm. And you both decided to go to Cairo. And then you have this fateful day, you know, and because, but I really think, like, you know, when I listen to your, when I read your story and I'm listening to you speak, like, your soul orchestrated all of that for you, right? Like this desire you had to go overseas and you land in Norway to meet the person that's going to get you to Athens, that's going to get you on that flight, you know, that's going to have this big event. And all of that had to happen. And so, but that, the crazy thing that I'm hearing and just like by reading your story is, That would be enough for anyone for one lifetime and they could call it a day. Like, okay, got done, you know, not you. There's more.
Yes.
And you just like keep having these enormous, larger than life events. And yes. So what it like, did you just say, okay, all right, I'm going to come into the world as Jackie and I'm going to take one for the team and like endure all of these lumps so that I can turn around and then share my message. And so your main messages that I'm hearing so far, it's like we all have the strong inner voice and never, ever, ever ignore it. So there's that.
Exactly. I'm so glad you see it that way, because that's how I've always thought of it that way. You verbalized it much more better than I would have, but that is kind of it. I've come through this whole thing and I look back on some of those things and I think, I could have never orchestrated this myself. It was, you know, like I said, one decision led to another, to another, to another, to where I am today.
And yeah, it's so divinely led and inspired. I mean, even as a special education teacher, and then after the hijacking, it's almost like you become one of your own students. And so you did go back to teaching for a little while, right? After you recovered. And you saw it so, you could see it so differently, right?
Yeah, but also it was too hard because of the reading level I was now on.
Yeah.
So I needed to let go of that. But I did go back to teaching because that's what I knew. You know, I was trained as a teacher. That's what I knew. I needed to make money. So I went back and it didn't work. You know, I was struggling. And so I chose to do that. That it showed me that this wasn't the path for me to let go, and I let go. And what came to that me was this beautiful career. There was a woman that called me and said, "I'd like you to speak to my church." And I spoke to some churches, and from churches, a woman said, "Stop doing this free. I'm going to give you $100, and do not talk for free anymore. I want you to speak." And all of a sudden things started to happen. And I got to this platform of speaking that was very enjoyable. So just because I've gone through all these hardships, I tell you what, I look back on that and I think that I experienced wonderful things because of them.
Yeah.
And some of the things that you're talking about, because you have privy to the second book, is I had a colon cancer diagnosis. I had a miscarriage. I had things that happened to me. And right after the hijacking, someone said to me, I wrote this in the book, that perhaps because this is a big bad thing, you got the big bad thing out of the way in your life at a young age, at the age of 30, and you're probably good to go from now on. Well, that wasn't the case at all.
No, that was...
I bought... I bought into it, but then I thought, yes, this is how life works. So then my journey kept going on and on. And then I have to say that when I started to live life on autopilot, on cruise control, it was to get through the days that were challenging and hard. And I didn't look up. And I did that for a long time. I would say for 28 years, I did that. And then finally, I looked up and I woke up. And I started to make choices to create joy in my life. And so that's what the book is about. It's called Wake Up. It's time to say yes to creating a life worth loving. I wrote the book for people who want more out of life, more joy, more passion, more adventure, more happiness. And I don't know what the answer is, what keeps us where we are. But I think for me, it was that I gave up. And it's complicated. The answer is complicated why I gave up.
What did you give up on?
I gave up on staying connected to my values. And I let go of if someone was treating me in a bully way, I sort of let it happen. And all in the name of, having friends. And so I sort of gave up. I gave up on my values and what I think is important in life, and started to just live my life and let it tumble around without me taking control of it and without me watching over it and tending to it. You know, we have to really tend to our lives each day. And that's what that second book is about. There's ideas to how to tend to your life every day and pay attention so that you are awake to your life. So you are awake to listening to that voice and finding the happiness and adventure that you crave.
How old were you when you received the colon cancer diagnosis?
I was 48.
48. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you seem pretty familiar with what people might call alternative styles of healing. I mean, like even back in the 80s, you sought out chiropractic care, which I don't think, and he seemed like a holistic chiropractor too, the way you describe him in your book. Like he was, had some like metaphysical components to his treatment style in a way, like, and that really helped your healing process.
Some of that's in the book too.
That
part of the book that in the second book, Wake Up, that talks about that he got this feeling that I was thinking about the hijacking over and over in my head.
Yes, yes. And so he had you cut the energetic cord.
I know. Isn't that great? I love that story. So there's all these stories of love, loss, hardship, and how I came out of it and what I learned from it, every single one of them. Everything, single story. There's got to be like 23 stories in there. And then also my transformation and how I started to transform myself and come out of cruise control to living the life I have today. Living a life worth loving. Now, I do believe I had glimpses of a life worth loving, but I didn't have a life worth loving.
Yeah. Would you call it people-pleasing or just kind of like accepting behaviors and treatment around you so that you had friends and you didn't feel abandoned or rejected or you felt like you belonged? Were these some of the maybe underlying drivers that kept you in that life that you was great, but you weren't maybe loving?
Yes, I think it's all of what you just said. Everything.
Okay.
Yeah. And we get hooked in somehow, or at least I did. I got to say me for sure to that. And I built my life around that. And then one day I heard some things. I heard some things from, I went to retreat center and I heard some things that made me want to wake up and stop this road that I'm on. And this road that I was on is a road that a lot of people are on, I believe. Just because we've built this life of ours that we just sometimes we're so busy that we don't really kind of go within and ask ourselves, is this really what I want? Or am I making choices today that align with what I want, what I think is true for myself? And I met people along the way, this journey of writing this book for 7 years. I met people along the way, and I thought this book was just going to be about those stories and lessons learned. That's all I thought it was going to be about. But then I started to wake up and thought, oh, shoot, I think the transformation needs to go into the book.
Yes.
Just when I thought the book was written, it's not. The book, the transformation was needing to get inside. And I'm so glad it did, because I met people that helped me on this path of waking up to a life worth loving.
Well, you know, and thank you for doing that. Like, first of all, you're so lucky. I mean, I know you've overcome, there's been a lot of hardships, and led like 5 lives in one is kind of what it feels like to me. And that by doing that, and I think the courage that it requires to be honest, to be so radically self-honest about, you know what, I don't like how I'm being, and I don't like what's going on. And that means now that I know this, I can't unknow this. You know, I can't unknow this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so now that means I'm at a fork in the road and I have to make a choice. And that choice, it may mean losing people, you know, relationships changing, opportunities going away that were important to me. And that the courage that requires is so, I think people would actually prefer to stay asleep than to exert the amount of energy and vulnerability it takes to be that courageous, Jackie. And so for you to write a book called Wake Up, you know?
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. You just hit the nail on the head or the head on the nail? The nail on the head. That is so true. Because if you wake up and you say, oh, I don't have any joy in my life anymore. What happened to it? I don't feel so happy. I want more. I want more from my relationships. I want more from my life. Then that's when you will start finding yourself on a path to do that, if that's what you want. And things will happen to lead you to that. But then if they start to appear for you, you have to take the bite, and you have to go for it. And if there's no really joy in your life anymore, there's a reason for it. And so sometimes you have to let go of some important relationships, important things that you built your life around, to open that door for joy. That's the hard part. That's the hard part. It's not easy. Let me tell you, it's not easy.
No, I mean, you've chosen a path of authenticity, and that's the hardest thing to do.
Yes, but it's possible. And I know
it's possible
that we can do this. It's not easy, but the rewards are priceless.
Well, you know, some people say, and I'm, this is like in the metaphysical world, you know, that there's this ascension that's happening on a global scale. So on a collective level, people are starting to wake up. And maybe COVID was a really eye-opening time for a lot of people. It gave people an opportunity to look at their lives and be like, wow, okay, now that I'm stuck in a house with my partner, I actually realize I don't think I like my partner. Like, you know, or we're not aligned anymore, you know. But it really did create a window of opportunity for a lot of us to examine our choices, because we really had no other choice. And the world is waking up. And, you know, we're all starting to start, you know, to realize these things. And so I feel like your second book is so well timed, and the advice that you give and the encouragement of, like, it almost kind of feels like, you know, if I can do this, you can do this too. You know what I mean?
Yes,
and it's like, yeah. And it's like, so it's like, if the willingness is there, know that it's not going to be a cakewalk, that you can do it. And when you do, it's so, so, so worth it.
Yes. Yes. There's this Hallmark movie that struck me, and I ended up putting it in my book. Oh. It was Always You. Did you see that movie? It was Always You, where Elizabeth is questioning her decisions. She's engaged and she's questioning her decisions. And her brother-in-law comes in and starts to let her know that she is worthy of happiness.
Yeah.
That she can create her own happiness. And she says, what will people think? And he says, well, it's not for them. The journey is not for them. It's for you. And so she goes on to find her way through what she is yearning for. And I think that was such a good thing for me to see, because that helped me along the way. And I heard someone say, what's good for one person is good for the next, meaning the decisions that we make will eventually be good for others. And that kept me going. And I'm very proud of both of my books. The first book talks about the hijacking and lessons learned and how I came out of it. And my question has always been, through all these hardships that you talked about or you mentioned, I always ask, how am I going to get through this? And mm-hmm. somehow I received messages and I got through. And after I got through, I looked back and happy that I actually got to experience those. But I'm telling you, you hit the nail on the head when you talked about it takes courage, it takes bravery. It does.
It does.
It does take a lot. It's getting up in the morning and following those messages. And once you decide that you want what you want, whether it's happiness, joy, a better life, that's all you have to do is want it. And somehow it starts to happen.
Yeah, it's like the universe will conspire
exactly
on your behalf.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, I didn't know the life that I have today probably started to move 5 years ago in this direction. And so it takes a lot of time.
And that's, you know, that's another like deal breaker for some people is just the patience that it requires. Like I think we're maybe a little bit spoiled and we want things to happen pretty automatically, like an Amazon delivery. And it's like, well, you know, no. And so tell me about your life now. I know what it was like in the, you know, the 80s yeah. and the 90s, but like, tell me about it now.
Oh, today I live
yeah.
in, yeah. So I let go of a few things these last 2 years, quite a few things, relationships that, and here's the thing is events started to happen to help me let go of things. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't one morning I thought, okay, I'm going to let go of this relationship. Events started to take place for me to give me an opportunity to let go. Do you
yeah.
know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Situations started to happen that helped me let go. And these were relationships that, like I said earlier, I built my life around, but were not mm-hmm. in line with the energy that I wanted to have or mm-hmm. the choices I wanted to have or my core values. We weren't in alignment with my assignment. And my assignment was that I wanted more joy, more peace, more love, more adventure, more mm-hmm. kindness, more happiness. And so it was created for me, these events, to help me let go. And so I didn't have to really do so much other
yeah.
than have the courage to follow through with these.
And I do know what you're saying. And I think of like my own life where it's like I maybe was having this internal knowing and it wasn't like a loud voice or a shouting where it was crystal clear, but it's like, it's almost like a wave that you can kind of feel coming. And then the universe almost makes it easy for you for like, it's almost like both of our souls are orchestrate some sort of disagreement where it makes it, now it is crystal clear, like, oh, it's time to let go, or it's time to cut ties, or maybe even more passive where somebody moves, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
okay,
yes.
like, thank you, universe. Thank you for letting that, you know, helping me out with that one. So it didn't have to be whatever, a confrontation
yeah,
even.
Right. It could be a conflict or it could be a situation that happens. But so it was sort of given to me and I took charge of it and then eventually mm-hmm. it happened. So I didn't really get into your last question of what I am to where I am today. So I live in Minneapolis. I have a 27-year-old son, and he lives about 20 minutes away. And he's the son that I retired for to be able to walk to the bus stop. He's a teacher now. And
pretty neat.
Yeah. Yes. And I live in a one-bedroom apartment, and I sold my beautiful home that I had about a year and a half ago, all part of letting go.
Big decisions. Yeah. You owned it for 30 years or something.
Yeah. And I let go of a 29-year relationship that was very important to me.
That's the heart. That is what your bravery with that.
Yeah, it's not
tremendous.
Easy to do these things, but if you want happiness and joy in your life and you don't have it, for me, the way I looked at it is I didn't have it because I had all this stuff in my life that was blocking it. And I mean stuff. It's not just people, but it was ideas and other things. So little by little, in this last 2 years, this transformation started to take place to help me get where I wanted to go.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, going back to what we touched on just a little bit ago about, you know, when we choose things in our lives that aren't in alignment, and the reason why we do these, which is a completely understandable reason, is to, you know, belong and to not feel alone, right? Because isn't that one of like the scariest things as a human is to like not be part of a tribe and not belong and not, you know, and to feel alone. And so for you, as with, you know, somebody, this happened before you turned 70, that to make a conscious and willing and voluntary decision, like to choose solitude alone, like I know that my joy and happiness is going to lie somewhere in this space of loneliness, which I would say 99.5% of us will accept, will refuse loneliness and accept circumstances so that we're not alone, even though they're not in full alignment with who we're supposed to be, meant to be, chose to be, because it feels safer. It feels safer and it feels more comfortable and it's familiar. But again, you did the hard thing. And you keep and you're doing it at an age where a lot of people will be like, you know, forget it. You know, I'm already this age, you know, like, you know, too much hassle. I'm just going to, you know, be grateful for what I have or something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
live in quiet resignation.
Yeah. What an inspiration, Jackie. I can't say it enough. Like your bravery, your courage, your sense of adventure, and you're such an inspiration. Whether you write a book or not. Yeah, but I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did so that
I love this new book. It's really been fun. Yeah. And I've let a few people read it, and including yourself, before it comes out on May 28th.
And yeah, very excited about it.
Getting some good reviews.
We will link it. Yeah, we will.
Oh, thanks.
I'll put it. Yes,
so
yes.
Here's another thing about just putting out there what you want, an idea of what you want in life. And all those stories came out of an idea that's in the book now. It's in the second book, Wake Up. All those things that you read about came out of an idea. I want to go overseas and teach. Something happened. I want to, let's see, what else? I want to travel. Things started to be created, and I had to make choices to get there. It just wasn't created for me. You have to make the choices, and you have to say yes to those things. But here's the thing. When I wrote that book, I felt like I needed to put it into manuscript form first before I showed it to a publisher. And so I found a really good editor in Corrine Casanova, and we worked on this for a year and a half and putting the puzzle pieces together to work on it. And because I was getting a message, put it into manuscript first. And I showed it to the first publisher, Soulspeak Press. And she read a chapter and she said, we're publishing this book. And I said, yes. And it was created. I sort of said yes to all these things that were happening and did something about it. And then all of a sudden, things are appearing in my life to help me get where I wanted to go. Even today, they're appearing in my life to get me where I wanted to go. And that second book, I talk about doing about 3 to 5 things a day to help you keep centered, to help you stay in tune.
Yeah, stay aligned.
And Michelle Fraley is someone I've worked with also. And she talks about staying in alignment with your assignment. What is your assignment for the day? And whatever that is, whether it's self-care or being with someone or going to someone's house to read them a book because they feel lonely or whatever it is, to stay aligned into your assignment and to keep your peace along the way.
Well, would you say that you have a big soul assignment, kind of like a soul, S-O-U-L? Do you feel like you have a big fat assignment and that's why you have these big fat experiences? And if so, what is that? And does your formula help you stay true to that? Because I mean, it's more than just 5 things to do today. It's like Jackie's here to wake up the world to being who they truly are. So do you feel that? Is that what you've got going on over there?
I never thought about it much. I just sort of live my life. And if it helps others, I think it's great. But yeah, I do have these crazy stories. But they're fun. Some of them are fun, aren't they? Some of them are about loss and some of them are about happiness and joy. And what did you think about that story of getting on top of a tanker?
I think it's funny that somebody's like, I'm never doing that again. It's like, yes, please. Yeah. But doesn't that describe you to a T? It's like,
yes.
Hey,
So I want to experience a lot of fun activities. And if they are presented to me in any form, as long as I'm not going to hurt myself, I say yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
whatever it is. Whether it's to that Outward Bound trip that I took, that's in the second book, or to climbing that gasoline tanker when I was working at Sellers Brothers.
The Outward Bound, that experience that you wrote about really made an impression on me because that's actually something I've always wanted to do. And so let me just share this with you. Sometimes I wonder, why do I meet people and why do people cross my path? And it's like, okay, there's a reason why I'm coming across this woman, Jackie Fluke. So what is it? So it's not just to have a guest on my podcast. It's not just to have some entertaining reading. I think it's because I actually can see where I have said no to things out of fear. And sometimes it's really small stuff. An invitation to an art show or something like that. But there are things where I have wanted to say yes, but I've been terrified. And I think what I've gotten out of reading your first book and the majority of your second book is that I'm actually still facing a lot of fear. I haven't confronted a lot of fears and I'm not quite sure why. And so that's therein lies my work. And so you've created, my own personal little lesson plan or workbook of what am I so afraid of? And if my clock was up today, what would I be regretting that I didn't do? And so I don't know if I'm too old for Outward Bound, but I learned about that when I was a teenager. And I was like, that's something I want to do. That's something I eventually want to do. And you did it. And it wasn't easy for you.
No.
Right? But you did it.
But it wasn't even on my bucket list. White water rafting was on my bucket list. And someone said, I went to this. And so I just did it. And so that's in the second book and how I got through that. But there's all these little stories that I said yes to. But I have to say that I've always been a yes person. As long as I didn't feel like I was going to get myself hurt, I said yes. And I believe that I was able to fear less and live more because of that.
I think one of the messages that you're conveying, in your second book is there's the yes that you say to having a joy-filled life. And then there's the no that you get to say, there might've been some yeses happening for you that were the ones that were in the line of, you know, people pleasing or whatever.
Exactly.
Right. And so, and that's where you have this beautiful gift of discernment, and it comes through in, of our inner knowing, right? That inner voice that we have of like, okay, this is the kind of yes that you say yes to, right? And this is the kind of the yes that I was saying that now I get to say no to.
Right.
And that
you got to somehow get good at saying, get in alignment to the hell yeses and the hell nos.
Yes.
Yeah. And somehow figure out where you stand with those and not give up something that might be a soul fulfillment just because there's not enough time in the day, but to always say yes to those things that will create, that you think might create joy. Now, that whole idea that you were just saying that you had said no to an art thing,
art
gallery.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about opportunities that come in front of our path. They may not show up again. So it's important to really look at going to some of these opportunities that we were presented, because they may be the answer to a question that you've been asking. How can I have more joy? They may be the answer, these opportunities that come up. And because you never know when you show up to an art gallery or you show up to go into a movie, you might meet someone that will give you the answer to something you're looking for. It's like a domino effect, like that first chapter right out of the gate on Wake Up. I go back to Malta and I go back to Malta 20 years later because I had an idea, a message. Yep. You're going back to Malta one day. Okay, I'm going back to Malta one day. And so 20 years later, it's in the book of how I ended up going there, but and how things started to align to help me get to the places I wanted to go to while I was in Malta. That's pretty spectacular of how those little events happened. But because I was able to go to Malta and say yes to Malta, going back to Malta, which is what I went back to say thank you to those that saved my life. Mm-hmm. There were so many domino effects because of that, that I wasn't even thinking that there would be. And
well, the sniper, like there was even a moment within your trip in Malta, right, where you said yes to something that was presented to you, right? And if you had not have said yes, then you wouldn't have gotten to meet the sniper who was nearby. And like the healing that you'd provided him by saying yes. That wasn't even about you. That was for him.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
And also that those two burly men in the corner when I was having a news, what do you call it? A news
press.
Yeah. Press conference that the chief of police put on. And there were people there and that wanted to hear me speak. And there were two burly men, two men in the back, and they were looking at me. And so after the press conference, I walked over to them and asked them if they were there that day 20 years ago during the hijacking. And they said yes. And I asked them what their jobs were. And they said that they took the bodies off the plane and took them to the morgue. 98 people were on board that plane and 33 people survived. And I thanked them for the jobs that they did. They were about my age. They would have been my age at the time, which was 30. They did those jobs. And then they turned around and I heard one of them whisper to the other, "No one has ever thanked us before." And so that domino effect happens when you say yes to an opportunity that is presented to you. And because it may be the opportunity you're looking for, if you say no to it, it may not show up again. So that's why it's important to say yes to things that lift your spirit. And because it may be the thing that you're looking for.
Well, I would like to assure you that I will start doing that more. I promise. That's my promise. Oh, Jackie, this has been such a wonderful conversation for me personally. And I know everyone's going to enjoy it. I just can't thank you. And I can't thank you enough for being the person that you are and writing this book and then putting yourself out there. And it's going to help I know it's already helped me, and I haven't even finished it. And it's going to help so many people. It really is. And so we're lucky to have you, you know, and you survived for a reason. And I know it's not been easy, but even that's been an inspiration too. And so thank you for all that you've done. How about that? Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me. I feel honored and I feel lucky to be here with you. I love your thoughts and your ideas and the way you think.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Love to You All. If you're enjoying this show, please share it with someone who you know would benefit. That would mean the world to me. And another fantastic way to support the show is by leaving a positive review and a rating. It just takes a minute. It would make a huge difference. I hope this message reaches as many people as possible. I really appreciate your support. And so until next time, so much love to you all. I want to extend a heartfelt invitation to join me this September in the south of France for something truly special. I'm attending the Sacred France Retreat, a transformative journey into the heart of the Cathar region, a land steeped in the mysteries of Mary Magdalene and the Divine Feminine. This is not just any retreat. It's a chance to remember love as your true path, to open your heart, and to reconnect with the deeper truth of who you are, held by the sacred land and soulful community and powerful intention of this retreat. I am going because I know this space will support the kind of deep alignment I'm always talking about. And if something in you is stirring as you hear this, I hope that you'll come too. Details are in the show notes. I'd be so honored to share this journey with you.